what a lot of turtles meant until I saw this bookshelf. Every single shelf is bursting with turtle figurines. Turtles, turtles, turtles! Glass, ceramic, marble, even stuffed turtles. Every single inch of the bookcase bears the likeness of a turtle, except for one bare space in the middle of the second highest shelf. Something about that bookcase makes my skin crawl. I take a step back, but I nearly trip over an unfortunately placed ottoman. I look down. The ottoman has been overturned, but I didn't knock it over. It was toppled over like that already. That's when I notice the chair overturned, lying on the ground. I creep closer, squinting into the darkness. And then I see what's on the carpet. And I scream. Chapter 6. 8 months earlier. Two Vixt employees. From Natalie Farrell. Subject: Welcome Party. I hope everyone will give a wonderful welcome to our newest employee, Dawn Schiff. She's replacing Edgar Hines as our new accountant, so she has some big shoes to fill. But I can tell already that she will do an amazing job. I brought some refreshments to have in the break room at 3 as a welcome to the newest member of the Vixt family. Please join us, Natalie. To Mia Hodge, from Dawn Schiff. Subject: Greetings. Dear Mia, this week I decorated my cubicle. I wanted to do something similar to what Natalie has because I love her sense of style. She has a plant growing in a pot in her cubicle with pretty purple flowers, which I notice her watering every day. I asked her about it yesterday, and she said it was an iris plant. So yesterday, I went to the grocery store after work and bought an iris plant just like Natalie's. I know what you're thinking. You always said I shouldn't try to be like other, more popular girls. I should just be myself. Yada, yada, yada. But I didn't do exactly what Natalie did. I added my own unique touch. I decorated the plant with some of my turtles from home. I don't mean real turtles, of course. I have a bunch of glass turtles in different shapes and sizes and even colors, although it isn't really biologically accurate. I put one of the turtles in the soil next to the flowering iris. Then I surrounded the pot with a few more turtles. I also have a turtle mouse pad that I brought in for myself. It's a photograph of a sea turtle swimming through the green-tinted ocean. Even though I still feel uncomfortable working in a new place, it made me feel better to have my turtles with me. Natalie has made me feel welcome, though. She has been so sweet. At the end of my first week, she threw a little welcome party for me in the break room with refreshments and everything. Well, the refreshments were just a bag of Doritos and a bottle of Diet Cola, but it was still very nice of her. I don't know if anyone has ever thrown me a party before in my entire life. You always asked me why I never had birthday parties as a child or allowed you to make me one, and I was afraid to tell you. Well, here's my confession. When I turned 5 years old, my mother threw me a large birthday party in our house, inviting every child in our preschool class. But the children wouldn't stop playing with my stuff, and I started screaming, threw my beautiful vanilla frosted cake on the floor, and then locked myself in my bedroom and refused to come out. After that, I was too traumatized to ever want a party again, and my parents weren't excited to make me one. I always preferred to have a private party with just you and me. Remember when we made that cake together, including our own buttercream frosting made entirely from scratch? Except, we accidentally used double the butter, and the buttercream frosting tasted like pure butter, and the cake was underbaked. We still ate it all, though, and it was better than any party with a bunch of kids from school. But Natalie's party was nice, even though I dislike Doritos and Diet Cola. There's a cafe downstairs where a lot of people purchase their lunches, but I bring my lunch every day and store it in the refrigerator. although I strongly suspect nobody is cleaning it on a regular basis. I suggested to Seth that I could create a schedule for people to alternate cleaning days and post the schedule on the refrigerator door. He told me he would think about it. That was a week ago, and he hasn't given me an answer. Maybe I'll ask him about it again later today. Today my lunch was white. Yes, I still prefer monochromatic meals. I can't explain why. I just feel uncomfortable when, say, I'm eating a sandwich that is mostly white and then there's this big hunk of green lettuce in it. Not to say I won't eat it, but I would prefer the sandwich was all one color. You're the only person in the world who didn't judge me for it. Remember how in the cafeteria at school, the other kids would play a game to try to squirt some ketchup or mustard onto my lunch to ruin the color integrity of it? I've been eating lunch every day at approximately 11:40, give or take 60 seconds. I walk to the break room, retrieve my sandwich from the refrigerator, and then I fill up my mug with cold water from the filter. I was just sitting down to eat when Natalie and Kim came into the break room with their lunches, salads, in identical Tupperware containers. Natalie and Kim spent a lot of time together. You don't ever have to worry about me becoming best friends with Natalie, as if anyone could ever replace you. Because Kim appears to have filled that role. Kim recently got engaged, which I know because Kim keeps coming over to Natalie's cubicle and then they talk about wedding planning for an hour or longer. Sometimes I consider joining in the conversation, but I don't know anything about wedding planning, so I have little to offer. I wish they would ask my opinion on one of the dresses in the magazines Kim brings to show Natalie, but so far they haven't. But today they asked if they could join me, and of course I said yes. In general, I prefer to eat by myself, but this was a good way to get to know Natalie better, and Kim as well. Maybe all three of us could be friends together. In school it was always just you and me, and I know you said that was all we needed, but three people can be friends. That's allowed. Kim asked me if I liked working here. I told them it was fine. I didn't want to tell them that the previous accountant left everything in an indecipherable mess. I have had to sort through everything from scratch. But I don't even know that man, so it wouldn't be nice to talk about what a shockingly terrible job he did. I could never be an accountant, Natalie said. She flipped that silky blonde hair over her shoulder, then she started talking about how bad she was at math. How she was always just barely passing her classes by the skin of her teeth. I didn't want Natalie to get too down on herself, so I pointed out that Natalie is very good at sales. My mother always taught me that paying people compliments is a good way to make friends. I never used to listen to her, but now I realize she was probably right. And since I have a chance for a fresh start, why not take it? And anyway, the compliment was true. I haven't been here long, but I already know Natalie is one of the top salespeople. The best at the company, according to the spreadsheets. She's extremely skilled at talking to people. I hear her on the phone sometimes, and I'll pause what I'm doing and just listen to her tap dance. Kim started giggling and said, "Nat could sell ice at the North Pole, especially to a man." That comment resulted in Natalie and Kim bursting into giggles. I guess they meant that Natalie is so attractive. There's a sales intern who is about 25 years old, and he always asks Natalie if he can get her something for lunch, but he never asks anyone else. And I'm fairly sure he doesn't make her pay for it. Kim is sort of pretty too, but she doesn't quite have the same indescribable quality as Natalie does. Then Natalie paid me a compliment. "Cute mug," she said. So guess which mug she was talking about? It's the one you gave me years ago as a birthday gift. A lot of people will go into a store and buy the first thing they see, usually a candle. But you always put a lot of thought into every gift. This is the ceramic mug, which is painted the color of the ocean, with a three-dimensional turtle swimming through it. Sometimes I like to run my fingers over the bump of the turtle shell. I can't even tell you how much I love that mug, and every time I drink from it, I think of you and get a happy feeling. Natalie's words felt like a genuine compliment. Sometimes when people say nice things to me, it's clear they don't really mean it. Sometimes it almost feels like they're making fun of me. But Natalie meant it. For a moment, I was sitting at the cool table in high school. So I thanked her. Then I asked the most important question of all, "Do you like turtles?" Natalie said she did. Then I explained that the turtle shell is actually part of its skeleton, that it's a bit like a rib cage, which is why turtles can't be separated from their shells, not without killing them. When I told her that, Natalie said, "Wow." I felt so excited that Natalie and Kim were interested in learning more about turtles. "You're the only one I've ever met who has been interested in hearing turtle facts, and that includes my parents. And honestly, there were times when I wasn't sure if even you wanted to hear about turtles. But me and Natalie and Kim ate together for the next 20 minutes, and I told them a lot of other interesting facts about turtles." They both listened to everything I had to say, and they even asked some questions that I, of course, was able to answer easily because I know so much about turtles. There's a lot more I could have told them, but then Natalie said she had to get to a sales call, so they both had to leave. I'm already planning out some new interesting things about turtles that I can talk to them about tomorrow. I'll let you know how it goes. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff. From Mia Hodge. Subject, greetings. Yay for new friends! Speaking of turtles, I've got a present I'm sending you. It sounds like you're totally fitting in, though. I knew you would. XXO, Mia. Chapter 7. Present Day. Natalie. I screamed for about a minute. That's my estimate. Based on about how long it felt, and also how much my throat feels scratchy right now, I screamed for a full minute. Then I managed to get it together enough to call 911 with shaking hands. Needless to say, I got the hell out of that house. Now the police are here. They are swarming around the house, dusting for fingerprints or whatever else policemen do at a crime scene. I don't want to know. I've been sitting in my car since they got here. I'm not supposed to leave, but I don't want to go anywhere near that house again. I called Seth to let him know what was going on and that I wouldn't be back at work. He sounded rattled, but that's nothing compared to how I feel. I usually tell Kim everything, but I didn't want to tell her about this. She'd just treat it like interesting gossip, which would be disrespectful. So instead, I text Caleb. He'll say the right thing. I know it. Sure enough, I get a text back right away. "Holy crap, are you okay?" "Not really." I'll be reliving what I saw in that living room until the day I die. All that blood. "Do you want me to come over there?" I've been trying so hard not to be a clingy girlfriend. Nothing is a bigger turnoff. But Caleb doesn't seem like the kind of guy who obsesses over something like that. And he offered. Plus, I want to see him. I want to bury my face in his chest, so I reply, "Yes, please." Just as I'm texting him the address, I'm interrupted by the sound of tapping at the window of my car. There's a man at the driver's side window. He's wearing a dark gray suit and tie. And I remember him briefly introducing himself as a detective before I went to hide in the car. I roll down the window. "Miss Farrell," he says.
"Yes?"
"I gotta talk to you. Can you get out of the car, please?" One of the uniformed police officers asked me a few questions before I ran out here. I suppose the detective has a bunch more questions, and maybe some answers, I'm hoping. Anyway, I don't have much of a choice, so I climb out of my car. The detective is in his 40s, tall and attractive in a craggy sort of way, with dark hair receding just enough to be noticeable. "Detective Santoro," he says. I nod wordlessly. "Sorry I gotta do this, Miss Farrell," he says. The detective has a heavy Boston accent. As somebody who grew up in Massachusetts, it's a comfort to hear it. When he told me to get out of the car, he said, "Ka." And if we were eating lobster for some reason, it would be lobster. I don't have much of an accent myself, although Caleb claims he hears it. He says it's cute. It's okay, I manage. Is Dawn... Did you... find her? He shakes his head slowly, and I let out a sigh of relief. When I saw the massive amount of blood on her carpet, I was certain she was lying somewhere in the house dead.
No sign of her. Just the blood.
So, maybe... I bite down on my lower lip. Too hard. I taste a hint of blood myself. Maybe she hurt herself. Got a ride to the hospital? Santoro nods.
Yeah, we're checking out that possibility. Calling all the ambulance companies and hospitals. So far, though, we're not finding her.
I'm not surprised, but it's still a blow. I see.
So why did you come to Miss Schiff's house?
Well, she was late to work. As I'm saying it, I see this skeptical look on his face, so I quickly add, also, she sent me this weird email yesterday, telling me she needed to talk to me about something important. He still doesn't seem convinced, so I add the clincher. Plus, her phone started ringing on her desk, and when I picked it up, it sounded like she was asking for help, like she was in trouble.
I see. Did you hear anyone else on the line?
I shake my head. No, just her voice.
Did anyone else hear the phone call?
That's a strange thing to ask. What does it matter if somebody else heard the phone call? No, just me.
So you and Miss Schiff were friends then?
A gust of November wind goes through my blouse and I shiver. Yes, we were co-workers and friends.
Close friends?
Sort of. It's not true. But Dawn didn't really have any friends. I'd believe it if someone told me I was her closest friend.
Do you know if there was anyone who was threatening her? Anyone she was afraid of?
No, nothing like that.
Does she have a boyfriend?
I almost laugh at how ridiculous the question is. But of course, he doesn't know Dawn. I can't envision her having a boyfriend. I can't envision her even kissing a man. I'm almost 100% certain she's a virgin, and she gives off the vibe that she isn't interested in ever not being a virgin anymore. Like, the way she wears those shapeless work outfits that look tailored for a man with giant tortoiseshell glasses that are too big for her narrow face. Never even a scrap of makeup. But I would never say any of that to a detective. No, she didn't have a boyfriend. Detective Santoro gives me a funny look. It takes me a second to realize why. I mean, she doesn't have a boyfriend. Oh, God. I just referred to her in the past tense. Dawn is going to be okay. They're going to find her and she'll be fine. No past tense. Present tense. All the way. But there was so much blood. How could she be okay if there was so much blood? And that phone call. Help me.
When was the last time you saw Miss Schiff?
He asks. Around 5 o'clock yesterday? I say. When I left work.
And she didn't show up for work this morning.
I nod, although he seems to be asking the question rhetorically. He already knows this is true.
So if something happened to her between 5 o'clock yesterday and this morning at...
8:45, I supply. That's when she always shows up for work, like clockwork.
She's wicked reliable, eh?
Oh, yes. One corner of the detective's lip quirks up.
I like that. I'm the same way. It's good to be punctual.
I very much doubt this detective is anything like Dawn, but I'm not going to say that. He won't understand what she's like.
So, I have to ask you, he says, where were you between 5 o'clock yesterday and this morning?
My eyebrows shoot up so fast, my forehead gets whiplash.
Me?
His smile is apologetic.
I have to ask.
I try not to be too offended by the question. Except, I don't know what they think I did. Do they think I killed Dawn, made up a phony call where she asked for help, then went back to her house and pretended to find all that blood on the floor? I was with my boyfriend, I finally say. His name is Caleb McCullough.
All night?
I wasn't with Caleb all night. We were together for part of the night. Then he left my house. I open my mouth to tell him that, but a nagging voice in the back of my head stops me. My fingerprints are all over Dawn's house now. The detective keeps giving me a funny look,
like he doesn't quite believe me. And there's one other thing nagging at me. "That's right," I say. "I was with Caleb the whole night." There. That should wipe the suspicious look off Santoro's face.
"And this Caleb," he says. "Does he know Dawn too?"
I lift a shoulder. "A little. He's been doing some part-time work for a company we work for, so he knows her, but barely."
"And that phone call this morning. You said it came from the phone on a desk."
"That's right." I get a sick feeling in my stomach thinking of how terrified Dawn sounded on that call. I'm so glad I didn't ignore it like Seth told me to. He rubs his chin thoughtfully.
"We'll see what calls were placed to that number. Find out where the call was coming from."
Wherever Dawn is, I hope they can track her down based on that phone call. If she's being held captive, she must have managed for a few seconds. Detective Santoro grills me with a few other questions about how I knew where Dawn lived, how I got into the house, and also about the broken glass on the floor in the kitchen. Even though I'm still feeling awful, I at least feel like the investigation is in capable hands. This detective knows what he's doing. I can tell how serious he is based on the fact that his eyes didn't stray south of my face while we were talking. He's going to find Dawn, wherever she is. I hope she's okay. Just as he's finishing up and about to go into the house, a uniformed police officer comes out the front door. He makes a beeline straight for the detective.
"Detective," the police officer says, "we got into the computer in her bedroom."
Santoro rubs his chin.
"Oh, yeah?" "Yeah, it was password protected, but she had the password written on a post-it note under her mouse pad."
Despite everything, I can't help but let out a little snort. That is so Dawn. So incredibly careful about everything, yet careless about other things. I bet her password was something like password 1. But snorting was probably the wrong thing to do. Detective Santoro gives me a look like I'm being inappropriate, and he's probably right. But like I said, he doesn't know Dawn the way I do.
"All right," he says. "Let's see what's in there."
"Do you still need me?" I ask.
"Nah, you're good."
He waves his hand.
"But do you got a business card or something?"
I reach into my purse and pull out one of my business cards, or cards, as he said it. As I pass it to the detective, I notice he takes it only with the tip of his fingers. It strikes me as a little odd, but I try not to get too paranoid. The detective and the policeman disappear into the house, leaving me alone. Good. I can finally get the hell out of here. I turn around to walk back to my car, just as the slightly beat-up green Ford pulls up in front of the house next door. Caleb. Thank God. I sprint over to him as briskly as my two tight Louboutins will allow me. Caleb is getting out of his car, and I throw myself into his arms before he can even get the door closed. I bury my face in his chest, the tears gathering in my eyes. This is the worst day ever. "Hey!" His large hand strokes the back of my head. "It's okay, Nat. I'm here." "Something terrible happened to her," I murmur into his shirt. I'm probably getting tear stains and mascara all over him, but he doesn't seem to care. "Don't say that." He squeezes me to his chest. "I bet she'll turn up." I pull my face away from him to stare up at him. Even in my heels, he's nearly a head taller than me. I've always liked tall guys. "What are you basing that on?"
Because if you saw how much blood was in her living room, you wouldn't be saying that. "Look, I don't know."
He offers a helpless shrug.
"I just think the best thing we can do is hope she's okay, you know?"
I feel guilty for snapping at him. He didn't deserve that after running out here for me. "I'm sorry. I'm just so shaken by everything."
"Yeah," he breathes. "I know. It's awful."
I rest my head against his chest. His heart thumps reassuringly in my ear. We remain that way for a good 2 minutes, me pressed against him, him gently stroking my hair. More points for Caleb. He's kind to me during a tragic event. This is taking our relationship to the next level.
"Hey," I say. "Yeah?"
"I need you to do me a favor."
"You need a ride home?"
"I would love a ride home, but my car is here and there's no way I'm going to leave it here, so I have no choice but to get back in there and drive back through the treacherous rush hour traffic."
"No,
That's okay. So, what do you need? Anything you want.
I tuck a strand of hair behind my ear as I pull away from him. I need you to tell the police we were together all night last night.
Caleb stiffens.
What? It's so stupid.
I shake my head.
The police were asking me where I was last night, like I need an alibi or something, as if I could have done something to Dawn. It's just a formality, I'm sure. I was there, so they had to ask me. So anyway, I told them we were together all night last night.
But, he scratches his chin, we weren't together all night last night. I left around 9:30.
Well, so what? We were together most of the night. That's good enough.
So that's what I'll tell them, that we were together most of the night and I left at 9:30.
I narrow my eyes at him. Is it that big a deal? I mean, you work with Dawn, too. It helps you also have an alibi.
His eyebrows scrunch together. But it's a lie.
It's a white lie. Neither of us did anything to hurt Dawn, so it'll just confuse the investigation if we don't have an alibi.
I don't know, Nat. He rubs the back of his neck. I don't feel right lying to the police. Why is it so important that we have alibis? They're not going to think either of us did anything to hurt her.
I fold my arms across my chest. Right. But I already told them we were together, so if you don't go along with it, I look like I'm lying.
But you were lying.
There's a stubborn tilt to his jaw that's pissing me off. Caleb is a decent, honest guy. I always thought that was a good quality. Now I'm realizing it's not necessarily a positive thing. Caleb! The tears that had started to dry up spring back to my eyes. This has been an awful day. Look, they're probably not even going to ask you. But would it really be so awful to go along with my story?
Hesitation is in his eyes, and I squeeze his arm.
Please?
After what feels like an interminable pause, his shoulders sag. Fine, I guess it's not that big a deal.
I'm surprised by the rush of relief I feel when Caleb agrees to confirm my story. I mean, it's not like I would be a murder suspect or something. But given everything, it's better to have an alibi.
Chapter 8. 7 months earlier. To Etsy seller. From Dawn Schiff. Subject. Problem with turtle figurine. Dear seller, I recently purchased a product from your Etsy store, advertised as a glass sea turtle figurine. Unfortunately, the product was not a sea turtle, and I would like a full refund. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff. From Etsy seller. Subject, re, problem with turtle figurine.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And we'd like to try to make this right for you. What is the product you received?
To Etsy seller. From Dawn Schiff. Subject, re, problem with turtle figurine. Dear seller, as I stated, the product was advertised to be a glass sea turtle figurine. Unfortunately, the turtle I received was quite obviously a land turtle. Sea turtles have flippers instead of legs, and the two front flippers are generally longer than the two back flippers. But the turtle I received had all four appendages of approximately equal length, and their legs did not in any way resemble flippers. Also, on the turtle I received, the head was slightly more circular rather than rectangular, which would indicate a land turtle as well. I am terribly disappointed, as I was hoping for a sea turtle, and I clearly received a land turtle. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff.
To Dawn Schiff. From Etsy seller. Subject, re, problem with turtle figurine. Is this a joke? To Mia Hodge. From Dawn Schiff. Subject, re, greetings.
Dear Mia, yesterday on my drive home, I stopped off at a store that sells assorted little tchotchkes and unusual items. Ordinarily, I visit this store to see if they have anything turtle-related. The old man who owns the store is aware of what I'm looking out for, so when I stop in, he will always tell me right away if he has anything I would appreciate. Last time I purchased a hinged box, in the shape of a turtle. The shell opened up, and one could put their trinkets inside. But I just put the box on my bookshelf empty. Yesterday, Ernie grinned at me with his yellow teeth and brought out a small turtle sculpture, which he assured me was hand-painted. The pattern on the shell was painted in gold, and the turtle was smiling, despite the fact that a real turtle lacks the ability to smile. It was a little expensive, but I had to have it. Ernie found a little white box, and he gift-wrapped the turtle inside the box because I did not purchase the turtle for me. This morning, I brought the gift with me to work. I'm not sure why, but Natalie and Kim haven't come to meet me for lunch again in the break room. For the last couple of weeks, they have been going out to lunch. They haven't invited me along, perhaps because I always bring my lunch. But I still really like Natalie, and I'm hopeful the two of us can be friends. A thoughtful gift might help things along. I waited for Natalie to arrive in the morning. I always get in at 8:45, but Natalie is liable to show up any time between then and 10 o'clock. Once, she didn't show up until noon, but I assume she was on a sales call. When she arrived at 9:13, she stopped at Kim's cubicle, and the two of them talked for about 20 minutes. When she finally got to her cubicle, I jumped out of my seat to greet her. She smiled when she saw me and said hi. Right away, I thrust the gift-wrapped box in her direction because I was so excited to give it to her. She was surprised by my gift. I could tell by how big her blue eyes got. She did not seem to understand why I bought her a gift, so I just explained that I saw it and thought of her. Natalie hesitated for a moment, but then she accepted the box from me. She sat down, and as she leaned forward to work on the wrapping paper, I caught a whiff of her shampoo. It smelled like flowers. You know how much I hate strong smells. But somehow Natalie's scent didn't bother me. When she got the box open, she slowly pulled out the turtle. She held it in her hand for a moment without saying anything. Then when she finally did say something, she said, "Oh." I also mentioned to her that I hadn't brought my lunch today. I suggested that I could come to lunch with her and Kim, so I could tell them more about turtles. But Natalie insisted that she and Kim would just be talking about boring sales stuff. I tried to tell her I didn't mind. I find the sales aspect of the company interesting. Not to say I could ever do what Natalie and Kim do. I can't imagine how they get on the phone and call companies or individuals and try to convince them to buy our products. I don't know how you convince someone they need a capsule filled with vitamins to make their eyes healthier, especially when there is absolutely no data whatsoever to prove any of the products work better than a placebo. I expect if I had tried, the person on the other line would hang up on me. Plus, Kim has all this wedding stuff we need to talk about, she explained. They've been talking nonstop about wedding planning. I overheard that the wedding is at the end of September, which Natalie said was perfect. I didn't understand how Natalie could help so much since she's never been married before, though. I pointed that inconsistency out to Natalie now. Her lips pressed tightly together when I asked the question so that her lipstick was nearly invisible. You don't have to have been a bride to know how to plan a wedding. I've helped a lot of friends with their weddings. And when I get married, they'll help me. If you get married, I corrected her. She looked surprised when I said that. I always have to remind myself that Natalie is not an accountant like I am. She isn't facile with numbers by her own admission. This was a great opportunity to educate her and earn her friendship. I explained in detail how the older you get, the chances of getting married decrease significantly, because as more people in your own age group get married, the dating pool decreases. So your odds of finding someone suitable to marry continue to go down. Of course, you could still marry somebody significantly younger, but most women, on average, seek men who are their own age or older. And of course, most men are seeking women younger than they are. So given her current single status, Natalie is likely to never get married. That's silly, she said to me when I finished explaining it all as simply as I could. I pointed out that she doesn't currently have a boyfriend or a fiancé. So at her age, it seemed preposterous to think that she'd ever get married. That's when Natalie told me she had to get back to work. I got the feeling I had upset Natalie, which didn't make sense because I was just telling her facts. You had to have been there. You would have gotten it. You're logical like I am. Natalie doesn't think the way we do, but I'd still like to be her friend. I tried telling her a few other interesting things about turtles. For example, there are turtles out there that weigh 2,000 pounds and can be 8 feet long. Of course, that's not the kind you find in a pet store. An example would be the leatherback turtle, which is the largest sea turtle species. But she didn't seem that interested, believe it or not. Eventually, I went back to my own cubicle. I was glad I gave Natalie a present, and it did seem like she liked it a lot. But I was surprised at how bad her manners were. Even I know that when someone gives you a present, you're supposed to say thank you. I also suggested the turtle would look good next to her plant, but she didn't move it. Do you have any ideas for better presents for Natalie? I just want to give her something she'd love, and you always come up with the best present ideas. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff. To Dawn Schiff. From Mia Hodge. Subject, greetings. I don't know, Natalie, but honestly, I agree that she should have thanked you for that present. Just remember that not everyone is as nice a person. If she isn't worth your time, you should stay away from her. Feel free to call me if you want to discuss this further. XXO, Mia. Chapter 9. Present Day, Natalie. I ended up letting Caleb take me out to dinner. I don't quite feel like being alone or going home to my empty house. So we go to a chain restaurant and get some food. But we don't talk much. My thoughts keep going back to Dawn and what could have happened to her. I can't even articulate my worst fears. When Caleb and I get out of the restaurant, the sun has dropped precipitously in the sky. In another 10 or 15 minutes, it'll be dark. He squints up at the horizon.
Are you going to be okay getting home? You still seem a little shaky.
Yes, I say, although it does make me a little nervous given the afternoon I had. He raises his eyebrows at me.
I know we both have our cars, but I could follow you if you want. Make sure you get home, okay?
That is so sweet. I lift my chin and pucker up, prompting him to kiss me. He grins and lowers his lips onto mine. You are so sweet. But I'm fine. Really.
Okay, but text me when you get home.
I squeeze his hand. I do wish I didn't have to get my car and could get a ride home in Caleb's Ford, but it seems silly to make him follow me home, especially since he lives in the opposite direction. And what are we going to do once we get to my place? Make out? I'm certainly not in the mood for that. Still, I wish he were coming with me. Maybe I should have taken him up on his offer. When I'm halfway home, my phone starts ringing. Mom is flashing on my car's phone display. I contemplate letting it go to voicemail, but I have a bad feeling I know why she's calling. If I don't answer, she'll just call back.
Natalie!
My mother always sounds like she's shouting on the other line. She's never learned to regulate the volume of her voice on the phone.
I just heard the news on the television. They said a woman at your company went missing!
Yes. I don't mention the fact that I was the one who discovered that Dawn was missing. I don't think that information would go over well.
Did you know her?
A little. Again, she doesn't need to know that Dawn occupied the cubicle immediately next to mine, that we shared a wall for 9 months.
God, how awful,
she sniffles.
Is it safe to work over there? I don't like that neighborhood.
Nothing happened at work. It happened at her house in Quincy.
What happened? I thought she disappeared.
I bite down on the inside of my cheek. Look, work is safe. I don't do anything unsafe.
I know, but honey, Daddy and I are worried about you living all alone. I don't think it's safe for you to be in a house all by yourself.
You wouldn't think that if I were a man.
Exactly. It's not safe for a single woman.
Her voice takes on a whiny tone that makes my skin crawl.
You need to get married, Natalie. Enough of this Whatever it is you're doing, find a nice guy and settle down. I grit my teeth. What do you think I'm trying to do?
Well, you're not trying very hard. You're a beautiful girl. You could have any man you want. Just pick one of them.
I start to explain that it's not so simple. But I've had this conversation with her hundreds, if not thousands, of times before. Possibly millions. She's never going to get it. I'm just wasting my breath. Of course, I could tell her about Caleb. I can tell her that things have been going really well with him, and he just might be her son-in-law someday. He's cute, and he's a good guy, and he's good during a traumatic situation. But I don't want to get her hopes up. It's still early with Caleb, and truthfully, I don't feel like fielding a zillion questions about him. I have to go, I mumble.
Where are you now?
I'm driving home.
Will you call me when you get home?
A vein pulses in my temple. When Caleb asked me to text him when I got home, it was sweet. When my mom asked for the same thing, it's annoying.
Mom, I'm on the verge of losing my temper. I'm a grown woman. I'm not going to call you every day when I get home from work. I'm fine. You have to trust me.
Before this can turn into an argument, I disconnect the call. Anyway, my house is on the next block. Like Dawn, I rent out a small house. It's two stories with two small bedrooms and one bathroom, and unfortunately no garage. I could have gotten an apartment like Caleb, but I like having the privacy of my own house. The rents aren't cheap in Dorchester, but it's worth it. Technically, Dorchester is part of Boston, but it was originally a separate town. And because it's so big, sometimes it feels separate from the rest of the city. When I'm driving back from my house to the Back Bay or the South End, I usually say, I'm going into Boston, even though I was technically in Boston to begin with. Most people in my neighborhood are renting houses, and most of them are small like mine. My house is more of a cottage constructed from brown bricks back in the early 20th century, now slightly crumbling, with vines running along the sides of the walls. It's never been renovated, and you can tell. Whenever I turn a doorknob, it feels like it's about to come off in my hand, and the entire house has a total of about 3 power outlets. Yet, it still costs a small fortune to rent. During the day, my house looks quaint, but as I pull up on my quiet street, I can't help but compare it to the house I saw earlier today. The small house on a quiet street like mine, with all the lights out inside. My stomach churns. I used to have a can of mace that I carried in my purse. I needed it for a while, but that situation has thankfully ended, and at some point, I ditched the can of mace. I did take a self-defense course a few years ago, but my skills are decidedly rusty, and also, there's nothing quite like a weapon. I wish I'd taken Caleb up on his offer to come home with me. I climb out of my car, clutching my purse against my stomach. And the horn honks twice as the door locks click into place. The moon is absent from the sky tonight. My neighborhood looks so dark in the evening, with just a few dim streetlights dotting the sidewalk, especially since we set the clocks back last week. As quickly as I can, I sprint down my walkway to the front door. My keys are still in my hand, and I fit the door key into the lock. I turn it to the right to unlock the door, but it doesn't turn. That's when I realize the door isn't locked. I take a step back. Why isn't my front door locked? What the hell? Okay, there's some possibility I forgot to lock the door this morning. Despite what my mother said, I live in a decent neighborhood. There aren't any break-ins around here. So yes, I do sometimes forget to lock the door behind me in the morning. Did I forget this morning? Entirely possible. I walk over the window. I cut my hands over my eyes to peer inside. The inside of my house looks completely dark. I don't see any movement. No burglars. No murderers. I can't very well call the police about this. Hey, 911, my house is unlocked. I could call Caleb, but I'm going to use up a lot of girlfriend points if I make him come all the way over here from his apartment just to walk me into my house for 2 minutes. Screw it. I'm sure it's fine. I twist the doorknob and push the door open, watching for signs of movement inside my house. It still looks completely dark.
Silent. Hello? I call out. It's the same thing I did when I was at Dawn's house. I try not to think about that. I take a deep breath and step into the foyer. I hit the light switch. Half of me is expecting to see some intruder in a black tracksuit and face mask standing in the middle of my living room. Instead, the living room is empty. It looks exactly the way I left it this morning. My phone buzzes inside my purse, and I nearly jump out of my skin. I fumble around between a pack of Kleenex and my compact, and I pull out my phone. There's a blocked number on the screen, just like earlier at work. I swipe to answer. Hello? I wait to hear a string of foreign language or someone asking me if I wanted to update my auto insurance. But instead, I hear only silence. Or maybe breathing. Hello? I say yet again. Nothing. I pull the phone away from my ear to disconnect the call, my heart pounding in my chest. I used to get calls like that all the time, sometimes with just silence, but sometimes with a string of threats on the other line. But I haven't gotten a call like that since, well, it's been several months. I doubt it's that same person. They have no reason to hate me anymore. Although I did get that other blocked call during my podcast. Could it be from the same number? Just as I'm starting to panic, a text message pops up on the screen. It's from Caleb, and the sight of it fills me with relief. Make it home, okay? I step into the living room. I flick on a second light. The entire first floor of my house now is completely quiet. There's nobody here. I'm fine. Thanks for checking. I drop my keys on the table next to the front door and then plop down on my leather sofa in my living room. I need to chill out. What happened to Dawn is horrible, but it has nothing to do with me. Nobody is out to get me. Chapter 10. I check the local news in the morning, hoping there will be a story about how Dawn turned up in, I don't know, a Dunkin' Donuts or something, drinking an iced Americano. And maybe all that blood was really just a bad cut from shaving her legs. But no such luck. The news reports that Dawn Schiff is still missing. Still, I'm half hoping she'll be in her cubicle when I get to work, oblivious to the fact that the entire police department is looking for her. But no, her cubicle is still empty. I walk past her cubicle to reach my own. The first thing I see on my desk is that turtle figurine that appeared yesterday morning. After seeing that huge bookcase filled with turtles, the sight of yet another glassy-eyed animal makes me slightly ill. Also, I distinctly remember that I took that turtle figurine and shoved it to the far corner of my desk so I wouldn't have to look at it. Yet somehow, it's made its way to the center of my desk, right in front of my keyboard. Must have been the stupid janitors. After I found all that blood in Dawn's house, it makes me rethink what that dark red material was on the turtle yesterday. Could that have been blood? Did someone put a bloody turtle figurine on my desk? I snatch the turtle off my desk and stare at it. This time, it's clean, at least. No blood or paint or whatever that was. But I still don't want it on my desk or anywhere near me. I don't want to see it ever again. So I toss it into my garbage bin. There. At least that's one problem I can deal with. Oh my God, Natalie! Kim's shrill voice rings out in my ear. Can you believe it? Yeah, I mumble. My temples are throbbing slightly. I don't feel like talking to Kim. It's awful. Kim's eyes are like saucers. What did you see in her house when you went over there? There was blood all over the floor. I drop my eyes. Like, a lot of blood. She clasps a hand over her mouth. Wow, that's so terrifying. I hope she's okay. I nod, knowing with every passing minute that they don't find her, it's less and less likely that she's okay. Kim scratches at her nose with her left fourth finger, the one with the giant diamond on it. She developed that habit soon after her engagement. I thought maybe when she got married, she might stop flashing her giant rock in my face. But it's too ingrained. She can't help herself anymore. Are you still going to do the race on Saturday?
With everything going on, I'd almost forgotten all about the 5K this weekend. I didn't even run this morning, even though I'd been trying to go almost every day to stay in shape for Saturday. But even so, canceling the race is off the table. I've raised a lot of money for the Cerebral Palsy Foundation, and I just can't give up on all that because Dawn went missing. I'm sure we'll have more information by Saturday, I say. I can't cancel, though. If she's still missing, we can run in her honor. It might even end up being a good thing. Kim frowns. A good thing? I clear my throat. I just mean there will be a lot of publicity around the race, and if Dawn is still missing, maybe it will help find her, you know? Oh, right. Anyway, I glance over at my computer. I better get to work, if I can focus. Seth was looking for you a few minutes ago. He said to let you know he wanted to talk to you when you got in. Great. What does my boss want from me? I'm not sure I want to know. After Kim leaves, I plop down in my chair, not eager to run over to see Seth. I pull my compact out of my purse and check my reflection. I look even worse than yesterday. My eyes are slightly bloodshot, and there are purple circles underneath. I tried to cover them with concealer this morning, but I obviously didn't use enough. I had a lot of trouble sleeping last night, and when I did fall asleep, I tossed and turned. I start to log onto my computer, but before I can boot up, my phone buzzes. I pull it out of my purse and look down at the screen. There's a message from Seth. Please come to my office as soon as you get in. I sigh. Looks like I'm taking a trip to my boss's office. Chapter 11. Seth doesn't look any better than I do. His dark hair is disheveled, and his shirt is a bit wrinkled, which is unusual for him. Seth is all about crisp white shirts. I was never sure if he took them out to be dry cleaned or if his wife ironed them for him. Given the continued absence of the wedding band, the latter could explain why his shirt is wrinkled. Hey, Nat. His brown eyes are full of concern when he sees me. Are you okay? Fine, I croak out as I settle into the chair in front of his desk. Jesus, what a mess. He rakes his fingers through his hair, which makes it even messier. I'm sorry I didn't take you seriously yesterday. It's okay. I can't blame you. I'm kind of surprised you didn't call out today, he says. If you need the day off. I shake my head. No, I'd rather work. You sure? Absolutely. Better to keep my mind off of it. Yeah, that makes sense. He closes his eyes and rubs them with his fingertips. I hope Dawn is okay. I wanted to say something like, I'm sure she is, but that wouldn't be what I really think, so I keep my mouth shut. I spoke to a detective on the phone this morning, Seth adds. Detective Santoro? He said he's going to come by and interview everyone. Oh, I squirm in my seat. The last thing I want is to get grilled by that detective a second time. He was nice enough, but the thought of talking to him again makes a cold sweat break out on the back of my neck. You know what? I think I might go home after all. I feel like my head is spinning, and I hardly slept at all last night. Of course. Seth's eyes soften. Take the day off. If you want, you can forward all your calls to my office. My shoulders relax. Thanks, Seth. Just stick around until the detective gets here, then you can head home. The cold sweat returns. What? Seth looks down at his Rolex. It's no big deal. He should be here in 30 minutes. Maybe less. He said before 10. Yes, but I press my fingers into my left temple. I have a splitting headache, and I've already talked to that detective yesterday, so I'm sure he doesn't need to talk to me again. Actually, he specifically asked me if you would be there and said he needed to talk to you. Oh. Fantastic. I guess I'll stay then. I shift in my seat, wondering what else that detective could possibly want to ask me about. I already told him everything I know. It seems like a waste of time, but now that Seth has told me I have to stay, I don't have much of a choice. I can't walk out and claim ignorance. Seth toys with a ballpoint pen on his desk. Once again, my eyes are drawn to the tan line from his missing wedding band. He follows my gaze to his ring finger.
I look away, but it's too late.
Melinda and I split up, he says.
I'm so sorry to hear that. He arches his right eyebrow.
Are you?
Something catches in my throat. I'm not sure what to make of his tone of voice. He doesn't sound angry, more like curious.
I am, I say.
His eyebrow stays raised.
Are you still seeing Caleb?
Yes, he nods.
He seems like a nice guy.
He is.
Good.
I still have that catch in my throat. I feel like I'm going to choke or something. I better get back to my desk. Seth nods and turns back to his computer screen. But I can feel his eyes on me as I leave the room.
Chapter 12. 6 months earlier. To Seth Hoffman. From Dawn Schiff. Subject: refrigerator cleaning schedule.
To Seth. I have created a schedule for cleaning the refrigerator in the break room on a twice-weekly basis, with each employee assigned a designated date to clean. With your permission, I would like to post this schedule on the refrigerator. Also, I have attached an information sheet about common bacteria that grow at cold temperatures. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff.
To Seth Hoffman, from Dawn Schiff. Subject: refrigerator cleaning schedule follow-up.
To Seth. Did you get my email about the refrigerator cleaning schedule? Please let me know ASAP. Sincerely, Dawn Schiff.
To Mia Hodge, from Dawn Schiff. Subject: greetings.
Dear Mia, I had a great day today. I came up with an idea that will save the company a ton of money. You're going to be so proud of me. I had considered talking to Seth about it privately, but he never seems interested in meeting with me. The only times I ever manage to catch him are when he comes to Natalie's cubicle to talk to her. I tried to talk to him last week, but he was on the phone. I waited in his doorway for him to get off, but then he pulled the phone away from his ear and said, "Jesus, Dawn, I'm talking to my wife. Can you come back another time?" So the meeting seemed like as good a time as any. The meeting was to talk about how sales are going with a new product that was just released by Vixt. The product is called CollaHealth. As far as I can tell, it's some sort of collagen product that is supposed to help your hair, skin, nails, and joints. At least, that's what it says on the sales pamphlet. Although, once again, the research studies are noticeably lacking. Also, it's an advanced formula. I don't know what the non-advanced formula is, because this is the only formula they seem to have. We all gathered in the conference room. Seth, his secretary, our sales team, our marketing team, and me. He sat at one end of the conference table, and Natalie sat next to him like she always did. It made sense, because she always seems to be a large part of these meetings. Everybody kept their eyes on Seth expectantly while noshing on the croissants he always brings. Or, at least his secretary brings them. Even though these meetings are largely useless because we never really decide anything or figure anything out, he always tries his best. People find Seth likable for the most part. There's nothing objectionable about him, I suppose. Although, he's not nearly as charming now that I've gotten to know him. I've heard some of the female salespeople remarking that they think he's sexy. I'm not sure why they would be talking about that, though, since he's married. Seth was talking about how Natalie is killing it with her sales, which is true. He likes Natalie, but objectively, her sales numbers are superior to anyone else at the company. He joked around with her asking her secret, and she just smiled and said it's a great product. I wonder if Natalie uses collagen supplements. Her hair is very healthy and shiny, and her skin always has this immaculate glow, like she's an angel. And her nails are always perfect. Today they were painted dark purple, without a scratch or defect on them. They were the most perfect nails I had ever seen. Remember that time when my mother dragged me to get a manicure? After 5 minutes, I left in a panic because the fumes were so toxic that I was scared to breathe.
She was furious with me, saying I humiliated us both. These days I keep my fingernails extremely short, like my hair. As for the rest of you, Seth continued, most of you are not meeting quotas. I'm not going to point fingers, but we could be doing a lot better. A lot better. The Syracuse branch had twice as much profit as us this quarter, and they're in freaking Syracuse. What are we going to do about it? I was nearly sitting on my hands as people around the table spitballed ideas at him. My idea was so simple. But I wanted to wait a little bit, because at the first meeting, Seth told me I talked too often. He told me to get control of yourself, Dawn. Jesus. The ideas were pretty much what you would expect. They all involved a large amount of spending. My idea was the exact opposite of that. When I was satisfied nobody had anything brilliant to say, I raised my hand and waited for Seth to call on me. Of course, then he got annoyed that I was raising my hand. He made a comment about how this isn't school, which made everyone snicker. That's when I dropped the bombshell. I've been going over the numbers in detail for the last 2 weeks, and our sales are decent. I took the liberty of obtaining the expense report from Syracuse, which is a much more profitable branch. And that's where things really differ. Our expenses are much higher, as I told everyone in the meeting. Dorchester isn't Syracuse, Natalie spoke up. Of course our expenses will be higher. So I showed everyone the folder with all my numbers. The biggest expense